Here's why you need to attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. Reason number one is networking. The opportunity to connect in person with like-minded recruitment business owners and share strategies and best practices. Of course, you can do that via Zoom or Teams, but the connection is deeper when you do it in real life. Wouldn't you agree? One of our previous attendees, Darcy, said that she loved the speakers and the content, but the best part for her was in between the sessions, the informal conversations with other successful business owners that sparked incredible insights and those aha moments. The quality of people in the room will be incredible, including many of the people you've heard me interview on this podcast. There's going to be big billing recruiters as well as business owners with multi-million pound businesses. What they all have in common is that they prioritize their own development. And no matter how successful they already are, they want to keep learning and growing. What's even more special and remarkable about this group is that they're all willing to share their knowledge and they're so generous at helping each other improve. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm very happy to be joined today by Stefan Aschenbrenner. After his career with large international retail and telecommunications firms, Stefan started his first recruiting business in 2001. In 2011, he joined EO executives to build out their German territory. And after 4 years, they became one of Germany's top 50 executive search and selection firms. Stefan became the managing director in 2016 of the entire EO International Group, and he became the owner in 2019 and relocated the headquarters to Cologne in Germany. EO is a franchise network with offices throughout Europe. They've helped over 4,000 clients to solve critical hiring challenges on both a permanent and interim basis. And EO Executives helps executive search professionals to build and scale a partner-led executive search firm. We'll discuss what that means shortly. And achieve a yearly turnover of 2 to 4 million without the risk of investing in expensive employed consultants. So the idea is to build a sustainable business that could be sold to a successor with significant equity value. Stefan, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Mark, thank you. I'm really happy being there. Thank you for being a guest here today.
My pleasure. So we have met once before and it was a few years ago, but you were reminding me of the exact date. Could you say what the date was and why it was significant?
Yeah, it was the 24th of October, 2019. Yeah. And it was actually the day we signed the contract to buy the existing shareholders of EO Executive out of the business and take over the company. So that's why I recall the day. And in the process, I always jumped out speaking with my lawyers, asking if everything is fine, and then finally giving the go.
Fantastic. So that was a momentous occasion for you. And yeah. I didn't realize you had all that going on at the time it was an event hosted by iIntro, our mutual friends at iIntro. I know that you were customers of theirs and they're partners of ours. And so they had asked me to speak. The event, I think, was called Retained Recruiter Academy or something
Academy. Yeah. Exactly.
And they asked me to speak. I gave a presentation about content marketing and how that can position you in order to, you know, have the authority and the credibility to attract opportunities to work on a retained basis. Mm-hmm. And that was a really fun event. And we love iIntro anyway. They actually sponsored the show. You know, I've known Plamen and James and the guys over at iIntro for many years. But I'm glad that they gave us the opportunity to meet as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great event in London we had. And yeah, same for us. We love iIntro or executive intro, as we call it. Yeah. And the more important, our clients, they love it as well. And our partners.
Absolutely. So I guess it gives you a real competitive advantage. But we can talk more about that later. What I'd love to learn more about your business model, because you kind of have created a way to sustainably scale a small boutique executive search firm, which number one is difficult to accomplish. And number two, very few of those create any, you know, real equity value, right? They're more lifestyle businesses, and then the owner retires, and then they close up. So could you explain a little more about EO and how that works?
Yeah. So basically, from the market side, we are in the position of search and selection. So normally, we start working with €100,000 salary package of our candidate up to €300,000. And this is a level which we feel that our clients want to have senior recruiters or senior partners on the other side. People who know what they're doing and who have been in the same position as the candidates and as the clients have. So we all learned it's about having senior people there. And that was my starting point in EO executives as well. I came from the industry, always worked in senior executive positions. So I started coming to recruitment and I thought, how can I? And yeah, the first thing I always thought must be in my case, I never thought about a lifestyle business. Yeah, I came from leadership positions and I always wanted to build something. So just doing the daily job, yes, okay, that's okay, but I always wanted to grow something. And the first thing I learned, and then my partners learned it as well, it's so difficult finding the right people on senior level. It might be different on recruitment level, where you can work with people being 30 years old. On our level, our customers, they just want to have people in their 40s or 50s, yeah, who are really senior. So I thought, how can I grow a company? Yeah. And the first thing obviously was, yeah, just reach out and look that you can hire senior consultants. Yeah. First thing I learned, they are really, the better they are, the more expensive they are. So they're incredibly expensive. Yeah. So In growing a company and growing a company fast, you either have got, you need to have got funds, to invest in people, or it's just a slow process of growing the company. And I found it's a risky process. Mm-hmm. So even though we are executive search professionals, it's so difficult finding people, make one choice and say that's the right choice. Yeah. So 100%. You invest money, you invest a lot of money, then you've got somebody on your team, then you have to train him, you have to onboard them, make them part of the team. And what we learned is that you've either got people who are really excellent and that's fine. You earn quite a lot of money. You've got people who are okay-ish. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yes, you make the choices which you will not do the second time. Yeah. Because you learn that's not the right thing you do. Yeah. So what we learned, you burn the money with the people you made the wrong choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
The money you earn with the really great people, you just put and reinvest in the other people you take on board newly.
Right. So what you're saying is like the profit you make on your top performers gets absorbed and by funding the people who don't work out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's right. I hear you.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. So we always found it, really kind of disappointing when you really want to grow fast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're always putting the money from the strong builders, investing in the newcomers, and then the other thing is, and that's what we learned in UK especially, and our office was located in Winchester, so south of London. The better the people are, the sooner they just go for a higher paycheck to London, So it always was a kind of a high turnover, and we spent so much time in training the people, and the people said, "Thank you for the training. This was probably the best training I ever got, but sorry, now I go to London, bigger paycheck. So it was a constant turnover in the company. So it was just disappointing.
Yeah, let me just reflect on that, because I think this is the experience of many owners who want to grow, and they experience this frustration and disappointment. And unfortunately, many of them give up and they just go back to, they think, well, it's just less hassle and less risk if I just be a solo producer and I'm making a really good living, and they just almost give up on their dream of building something because it's so difficult. And now, don't get me wrong, it can be done. And we do have clients who, we have a program called Apex, which is for those who wish to scale. And sort of to they typically have between 5 and 25 employees, and they want to just get, you know, establish a really strong, successful company that runs without them. It's hard. It's really, really hard. And we tell that to people. We say, look, only do this if you are 100% committed to growing, because you can absolutely do it. If you want it badly enough, you know, we can help you navigate, you know, hiring, onboarding, training, retaining, developing people, you know, but it's hard. So if you have found some solutions, Stefan, to, you know, take some of that pain away, then I'm all ears.
Okay, yeah. So from my personal background, and this is basically the route we're talking here about, is I started my career in one of the biggest hardware retailing franchise organizations in Germany. And I was absolutely fascinated that strong entrepreneurs are joining together and joining a franchise organization, to be more successful than doing it by themselves. And franchise sometimes, if you talk about the Subways and all these other kind of organizations, sometimes it appears like the small or the weak entrepreneurs, they join a franchise organization. And the organization I came from, our partners had to invest 20 or 30 millions of euro in a hardware store.
Okay. Yeah? So they were serious. So, like they were.
So they're absolutely serious. They were in business in the first or second generation, and they have been entrepreneurs by heart, strong people. And these strong people, they discovered it's just more successful to join a strong organization. And that was an absolutely trigger point for myself.
Interesting.
So having this situation in executive search, finding it very difficult, I thought there must be another solution. Looking for strong people with a strong leadership background, coming from outside the executive search field, giving them a really excellent training, excellent coaching, and then grow the company. And that's what we started doing 2011 here in Germany. And 2014, as you just mentioned, we have been awarded top 50 of all German executive search firms. And there are more than 2,000.
Wow. In that's Germany. Incredible. Great.
Yeah. So that was a really great journey.
So, Stefan, I can understand from your point of view that growing the organization, the model that you found the most successful was, instead of trying to hire recruiters, it was better to find people, our entrepreneurs, who are committed, they were willing to invest, and they were senior executives themselves. You trained them and gave them the systems processes to run a successful search firm. And that meant that you're only working with people who are strong, highly motivated, and are going to, you know, do everything they can to make this successful. But how does that then cascade to your franchisees, your partners? How do you help them to grow a sustainable business for each of their companies?
Yeah, that's a really very interesting point, Mark, you're mentioning. How do we help our partners to grow? Because that's a big learning I had. So I'm a guy who wants to grow and wants to scale and wants to leave a legacy. Mm. So we called it in EO, in the meanwhile, 7 levels on okay. executive search. And this journey always starts on level one, which is preparation state. Yeah. So we help our new partners to prepare everything they need for having a good start. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Second level is what we call the essential level, which is train them, helping them get the first clients, the first placements. So getting the first money as soon as possible, because having the first client, the first placement changed the entire mindset.
Oh, yeah? Absolutely.
Of people. Yeah. Everybody can recall the first placement and now that they are in the game. Yeah.
Yes. You're hooked at that point because you've seen the results and you want to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. You do it. Yeah. And you have got the result. Mm-hmm. And then the people normally go on the level, which we call the professional level. Mm-hmm. And a professional level is, in our understanding, a level where people make 350,000 euros or pounds in annual gross margin. Mm-hmm. And that's a good income. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've seen people coming from really great leadership positions, and they're now by themselves making these 300,000 euros in gross margin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they say, wow, I love it. It's excellent. I only have to care about myself. Mm-hmm. I only have to manage myself. I've got my own clients and everything is fine. And a couple of years we thought about, wow, why do they stop growing? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we learned there are people who love it. And I think that's excellent if mm-hmm. people are on the stage on a professional level. However, there are some people who say, if I can do 300, why it's not possible to make 500? And we call this the synergy level. So we help.
Did you say
them.
Synergy?
Yeah, synergy level, or leverage, okay. leverage level, basically okay. leverage level. Yeah. So we help them to leverage basically their time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We help them with research. We help them with assistances. Yeah. To go from 300 to 500,000 or 600,000 euros in gross margin. They are still the most important person in their business because they are the partner, but they've got research and assistance services.
Could we just pause on that for a second? Because so first of all, you've identified, and I agree 100%, some people don't want to grow. They want to stay at that professional level. They're making 200,000-400,000 and they're, you know, as a one person enterprise, and they like that. Yeah. They don't want the hassle. They don't want to be responsible for other people. And that's absolutely fine. In fact, I'd say that's 90% of recruitment business owners fall into that bucket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And then so to get to the next level, what you're saying is there's a level where you're still the sole producer. You own the client relationships and you are the rainmaker, but you leverage your time with research and having assistance. So agree 100% on that. What are the kinds of tasks and projects that those assistants are performing in order to maximize the productivity of the partner?
Yeah. So in research is clear, helping the partner to have quality interviews, yeah, yeah. And taking all the jobs before the quality interviews, yeah, mm-hmm. and then managing the entire process with the client as well. We think on a leverage level, you basically, as an executive search professional, have two areas where you are most successful. Mm-hmm. This is interviews with your candidates. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and being in contact with your clients.
Right.
And the better it is and the more time you spend in one of these two bubbles, yeah. the more successful you are.
Totally. Makes sense, yeah.
And our most successful partner, he's doing 1 million mm-hmm. with this kind of working model. Yeah.
Great.
And the team organizes everything for him. Yeah. And he's just in interviews and together with his clients.
Got it. Yeah. No, it makes total sense. The more time that you can spend, those are really the core revenue generating activities. It's speaking to relevant candidates and meeting with and talking to your clients and then architecting the deal and overseeing, you know, that successful search process. So if you can get other team members in the background doing everything else, then it maximizes the time at what you're best at. So yeah, that makes 100% sense. Yeah. And okay, so then after the leverage level, what's next?
Yeah, so the leverage level is still built on that the partner is the most important person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My brother, he's a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a working model. Yeah. If he's not with one of his patients, yeah, he does not earn any money.
Right.
Yeah?
Of course.
And if he is on vacation, there is no cash flow. There's no money coming in.
Absolutely.
Yeah? Because he's the doctor in the firm. Yeah. So the next level above the leverage level is the team level. And this is really about my position. It's a team level, which I started 2011. Yeah. Having 10 people, 10 consultants in my team, who have their own clients, who build their own clients. So they do the work and I'm just one of them.
Mm, yeah. Yes.
So, and that totally changes the game. Yeah. It changes the game of I'm not the only biller in the business. Yeah. So there are other client relationship. And this is very important if you want to sell your business at a certain time in the future.
Yes.
If all the connections are bound to yourself and you walk away, risks are that 80 or 90% or the entire business is collapsing.
Exactly. 100%. Yes. If you're
100. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, if you are the primary biller and you own all the client relationships, the business has no value without you because
zero value.
Yeah. The person, I mean, what would they be buying? You can buy a database, but you can rebuild a database. It's the relationships that, you know, have the value.
Yeah. Yeah. So on this level, on the team level, when you've got your team and in our solution, it's a partner-led team. So bringing on partners because you don't have to invest all over again, time for time.
Wait, could you explain what you mean by that? It's a partner.
Partner-led is as you just said, as in a franchise organization. Yeah, the partners come to us. The partners get excellent training. They get coaching and support. Yeah, so they build their own clients. They have got their own candidates and they work together in a team and we called it a cluster.
Okay.
Yeah. And a cluster for us is always in bigger countries as Germany, there's a strong FMCG cluster with one cluster leader and he builds his team of 10 or 12 partners only working in the field of FMCG. Yeah.
So the cluster is built around a niche market. Whether that it could be an industry or it could be is that how you organize it or?
Yeah, mainly it's industry. Yeah. Mainly it's industry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rather than function.
Yeah, we found it more easy to build it around industries. Yeah.
Okay.
But IT, for example, is something in between. Yeah, it's a function and an industry.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, so, but explain to me how one ascends from the leveraged or synergy level to the team level without the obstacles you mentioned earlier of the, you know, constant churn of hiring, training, and then, you know, losing people and so on.
Yeah. So the first and most important distinction is that we normally do not look out for employed consultants, but we look out for franchisees or partners, self-employed partners.
Got it. So your partners can themselves recruit other partners to work for them?
Yeah. Yeah, if they become a cluster leader, and the cluster leader position is a different position. So I asked a couple of my best performing partners, what about your own appetite to really build a team?
Mm.
And I asked five of them.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them said, sorry, no, I'm really happy where I'm currently at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I learned that's totally okay. That's totally mm-hmm. fine. And three of them said, yes, absolutely. I want to build my own team. I always was a leader in my former career. So mm-hmm. I know I can lead. I know I can build. I know it's just something which I really like and love. Yeah.
Yes.
And if you can give me an opportunity in executive search, yeah, in building my own team without investing all over, yeah, I would be happy. So I said, okay, so let's do, and let's call this a cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And you now got the opportunity building your cluster, yeah, which could be, as we just said, an industry, FMCG,
yeah,
or in smaller countries like Austria, yeah, mm-hmm. the entire country.
Interesting. So, I mean, you could, when you use the word cluster, some firms might call that a practice area.
Yes.
Something like that. Okay, got you. No, it's really important what you said, like, if you're going to grow, you have to enjoy leading, developing others, you know, and not find that a burden. And that's something that's distracting you from what you really want to do, which is make placements. Because the mindset you need to, in order to really be successful at scaling something, is that you want to develop others and you want to, you enjoy that part of it. Or maybe you've, yeah, I think it's really important to know yourself and whether that is going to be something you're excited about or something that you find burdensome.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's, the starting point is always that you normally had leadership positions in your former career, and you say, I'm happy in executive search. However, something is missing. Yeah. Mm. And this is this leadership part of the role. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we help our cluster leaders to build. And then it's always a question about being a strong biller and a strong builder at the same time.
That is difficult, Stefan. And in fact, I'd say that is the most difficult job in recruiting. So being a biller is already challenging. It's exciting but and rewarding, but it's not easy. It's not an easy job to do it really well. And then being a business owner where you have a team of billers is also challenging in different ways, and has its you know, it's a different set of problems and skills that need to be developed. but then to combine both in one, you're basically doing two different jobs at the same time. You're still doing mm-hmm. everything you were doing before to run a successful desk or, mm-hmm. you know, function. And then you're also doing a whole another job, which is the building. So billing and building, mm-hmm. Challenging. How do you support people in order to, because what here's what I've seen. I've been doing this for 20 years or so. When people take this on, there's one of four possibilities. So number one is they continue to excel, but their team is underperforming, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one, because they're still focused on themselves and their own deal making, and they kind of ignore the team that they're responsible for. Or it can be the opposite, situation number two. They forget about their own clients and they devote too much time and energy to building their mm-hmm. team and supporting their team, and their own billings drop off. Okay.
Mm.
So that's possibly number two. Possibly number three, which is the worst situation, is they devote time to their team, they ignore their own clients, their own billings go down, but their team don't perform, and now they're really screwed, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's like the worst case scenario.
The worst.
Right. Now, that what we want to have happen is option number four, which is that they maintain and continue producing at a high level themselves, and they build successful billers as well. And so that is that's what we're aiming for here. But I've seen all four of those different scenarios, Stefan. So how do you ensure that they achieve both their own billings and they help their team to bill as well?
So it all came down to, again, to synergies. To always have a look, are there things in the business, we can do for them that they do not have to do it? And the most important part is all the pre-boarding, the onboarding, and the entire training and coaching process. And that's something. And that's the point in your four options you just said, training people, I learned, is the most important thing. It's the most important thing. And I absolutely can subscribe the situation you just described. You have got your own billings, then you have got the team, and you're always in this kind of tension between the two poles.
Balancing.
And back and forth. So we do the entire training for all new partners. We do the entire onboarding for all new partners. So basically our leaders, they are billing their own clients while we train and coach their people. And the trick is, it's much more easier to train 3, 4, 5 people at the same time.
Definitely.
It's better for everybody. So our leader is billing, he's doing his own business. We train a team of people coming from different countries, coming from different clusters. So they instantly feel, wow, I'm in a bigger organization here. I've got other colleagues I can turn to. We meet them every morning. All new starters, all come together, discuss what has been yesterday, progress yesterday's difficulties yesterday. And that creates an entire different spirit and culture in the organization. And still our leaders are building and doing their own business at the same time.
Interesting. I like it. And it makes total sense. You've got, that's the advantage of, or one of the advantages of being part of a network like EO, rather than doing it everything yourself, is you have resources of a bigger organization that you can tap into, such as learning and development, which is so critical. And I can't understate how important learning and development is to the success of your team members. You just need to invest time and energy in that. And so I guess they can plug into your learning and development. I still feel that the owner needs to enjoy coaching, because once they finish their, let's say, onboarding process, the learning doesn't stop, right? It's ongoing forever, continuously leveling up and, optimizing what you're doing.
So absolutely. Coaching is one of our favorite themes in EO. So it's important to coach people. And the thing I learned, and this was, again, a painful learning from the very first day, some 10 years ago. I came from my own leadership roles in the industry. I knew how to coach and support employees. To train and to coach entrepreneurs is totally different.
It is
absolutely and totally different.
Say more about that, because I'm in the same position now, because I used to train like team members, recruitment consultants, and salespeople. And now I coach business owners. So what's been your experience of the key differences?
So a key difference is, in an employed model, the roles are kind of different. I'm the manager and you're the employee. However you play it, it's a pretty clear model. May I see your numbers? I can ask my employee, and absolutely, it's part of the game. I have to show the numbers. As an entrepreneur, he says, Wait, I'm here an entrepreneur and I don't want to be managed. I don't want to have somebody who's looking if I'm doing things right. And they give you a pushback. And this easily comes to a situation where people say, may I see your numbers? No, everything's fine. Yeah, but please tell me your numbers. I don't think they're, you think my numbers are not fine. So it's a,
yeah. Okay.
And it's an easy situation. Yeah. And most people end up in this situation. Yeah.
But surely, that is a matter of getting permission and buy-in at the outset.
Yeah.
Of how you would like to support them in order to ensure that they are successful.
Yeah.
And so it's almost having that agreement up front that, look, this is our process to ensure that you are successful, that you make as much money as possible, and I'm here to help you, and I'm here to serve you. And part of that means that we'll have monthly business reviews. And we'll analyze your numbers and look at, where there's opportunity for you to increase your revenue without working any harder, because we have the experience to be able to analyze your ratios, for example, and spot the parts of your process where you could just make a few little changes and up-level your results. Are you happy with that? And so you get them to buy in at the beginning. That would be my approach anyway.
So it's absolutely important to get the buy-in at the beginning and get a clear understanding who's got which roles here in this game. We called it the alignment process.
To
get the people aligned. And people normally tend to forget what they committed to.
Okay, fair
enough. So if you had this in first month, the first month, they probably forget it in month three or four. So the most important thing we learned is to offer our partners every 3 months a new 90-day planning session. Mm. And it's about helping them plan their next quarter.
Great, love it.
And again, it's a team session, yeah?
Okay.
So partners come together and partners discuss, what did I do in the last 90 days? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What went well? What did not pretty well? So what's the plan for the next 90 days? And they discuss it together, the partners. It's led by one of our leaders or by myself. Mm-hmm. And then they have got their own plan. And then at this point, it's again easy to jump in and say, shall I support you? Oh, yes, please. Shall we have weekly or monthly catch-up calls? You show me your numbers. And it's all about measuring. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And shall we do it? And we then do the realignment again every 3 months. Yeah.
Awesome. Yep. Makes total sense. Because you're right. Owners, the reason people start a business is they want autonomy, freedom, ownership. They don't want to be managed, right? And so if that's not handled correctly, then people will feel defensive and it can break down communication for sure.
Absolutely easy. Yeah. And we fall into this trap over and over again by ourselves. Yeah. So in 2020, I made business coaching. Coaching by myself. So I'm a certified business coach now. Mm-hmm. And I learned how to coach other people. Yeah. Like in a normal client relationship. Yeah. There's a coach and the coachee. And I found that's absolutely the same model. It's absolutely happy and truly the right thing to do in the relationship to our partners. So we are now training all of our leaders in this coaching happiness.
That is awesome. Stefan, a couple of things I want to say here. First of all, I agree 100%. If you are a business owner, you must also be a coach and develop and that is a skill set that can be learned and developed and improved. It's not necessarily instinctive. I mean, we tend to find recruiters and recruitment business owners tend to be good communicators. Mm-hmm. But, it's still an area that needs to be really developed and given top priority. But as we're speaking here, it occurred to me what you're saying about the alignment process, the 90-day planning, and then gaining buy-in to support people on a whatever timetable, weekly or monthly follow-up and look at numbers. I actually think that's the same in an employed model. Mm. I think that these days people value autonomy and they want to, they don't want to be micromanaged. Even if they're an employee, that if you're, if that conversation isn't approached in the right way, you are still going to get pushback, even from an employee. You'll get resistance, you'll get bad feeling, and possibly turnover. And so I think the mindset you described in the way that you handle things at EO, when you're supporting and team members who are partners, I actually think that process could be applied in an employed model as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely true. Yeah. The principles are the same, yeah. Mm-hmm. Though the relationship underlying is different because it's different. So it's more easy to go into the wrong direction, and being more pushy or going more to micromanagement, which an employee normally does not like. I'm totally with you, absolutely, yeah. On the other side, which will totally and instantly destroy communication with a partner. Instantly.
Right. Yeah.
It closes a door and the door is closed.
Right. Okay. It sounds like this is born out of experience, Stefan.
It is. Yeah. So this was in the, let's say, in the early days, mm-hmm. when we learned how difficult it is to build such a partner-led organization, and to be honest, 50% of all partners left again after 1 or 2 years, so we learned it the hard way, and we are now in a situation that nobody leaves again. So
that's great.
When people onboard, they stay with us.
Now can I play devil's advocate for a minute here? I really want to understand. Now, I understand that a franchise is different in that there are contracts involved and it's maybe a more solid business model. But what we find, like, we have a lot of clients in the States, probably 55% of our clients are in the US. And it's very common there for search firms to not employ people, but to have people who are what they call 1099. It's like a self-employed, contractor essentially, who is working full-time for your firm, but ultimately they are self-employed. And this raises many of the same issues you just described, in that it then is harder for you to manage that individual because they have more of a lone wolf mentality, or not lone wolf, that's the wrong word. Free agent. They have a free agent mentality, which is, if someone's going to take that risk of not having a salary, for example, and eat what you kill, they need to make placements in order to make money, then the risk of that from the owner's point of view is is the same type of entrepreneurial mindset where someone is more likely just to set up in competition to you. And so isn't there a risk in hiring partners rather than employees? Isn't there a greater risk that they decide to go completely on their own?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point you're making here. Yeah. What we learned is that, yes, there are these kind of people out there, who just want to be part of something, get all the training, and they've got the mindset of go hunting and eat what you kill, and I do everything by myself. And this basically is a mindset thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are people out there who've got this mindset, and I'm happy that there are these people out there, and I'm happy that they are not part of EO executives, because there are also other people who've got a totally different mindset, and it's a mindset thing. People out there have got the mindset, I do not want to be the lonely wolf. I'm looking for having a team. I want to have collaboration. I want to share my business. I want to go to hunt the big deers, which I cannot hunt by myself. Yeah. Mm. They've got a mentality of not cut the pie, but of growing the pie.
Mm.
And basically our cluster is part of exactly this solution to not just say, okay, you're part of the FMCG cluster. Okay, so what's the what's it all about? Yeah. So if we onboard them, we say to them, you can be part of the FMCG cluster. And our joint goal and mission in FMCG is becoming one of the top leading FMCG search firms in Germany. Yeah.
Yes.
So they are part of the team. So they meet each day. They go hunting together. They have client meeting together. Yeah. They have joint account management if there's the bigger firms. Mm. If it's a small firm, they do everything by themselves. And that's fine. Yeah. So we see, I call it sometimes collaboration as a service.
Okay.
Yeah. So if there's a role you're not the real professional in, yeah, just bring one of your colleagues in. Yeah. If
right.
the client is too big, go hunting together.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see the benefit. Well, let's return to mindset in a second, but certainly there's a huge benefit of if you're the market leader, you're part of, let's say, one of the top FMCG search practices in the country, that's way better in many ways than just being a small fish nibbling the edges, right? Mm-hmm. But also, the mindset thing is interesting that you're looking for someone who wants the collaboration, who looks for opportunities to maybe share fees. For example, I introduced you to this client because if the role is more suited to your background or what have you. How do you identify that mindset before you partner with them?
Yeah. So basically, the first thing is to be very clear about your own proposition and telling how you're working and that you're not looking for people working in silos. That's the first thing, that they get a clear understanding of what the EO mindset is all about. It's all about the values in the organization.
Yes.
Yeah? And then you instantly learn how they react. Yeah. The questions they're asking. Yeah. And if you've got somebody who's always the solo hunter type, yeah, then instantly bunch of question came, but how you do this and how do you make sure it's your client or my client and what about the conflicts? And you know, you already know, okay, he's looking in a limited mindset. Yeah.
Okay.
And other people, they start telling you exciting stories about what they did in the past and that they did it in the past as well. And then you ask, then you and the person asking, and how did you manage the conflicts coming? And says, yeah, okay. So they telling the stories. Yeah. So
you
instantly can feel it.
Yeah. No, it makes good sense. It makes good sense, Stefan. So the other thing I wanted to ask you is building equity value in a search firm, because this is the big, I think, drawback to staying small. And, you know, most search firms, they reach a point, the owner retires and they just close up shop. And, you know, and if they've made a good money throughout their career, then they probably have other investments, you know, and they that's it. They sail into the sunset. But to me, you mentioned leave a legacy as one of, like at the beginning, something that's important to you. And I think it's sad that you've put decades maybe into building a business and a brand and relationships, and then that just finishes. There's something sad about that to me, and maybe people are happy with that, but it's so difficult though, because your firm, especially if you are the primary biller or, you know, it's just small, it doesn't typically have a lot of value. So what is your solution to that?
Yeah. So the solution again is building an executive search firm with self-employed partners and not employees. What I learned is that if you've got, even if you're at the stage of having your team with, let's say 10 employees, yeah? Mm-hmm. Normally, and sorry for being a little bit black and white here, mm-hmm. employees normally, they are employees because they love being employed, yeah? Mm-hmm. To getting the paycheck, and they don't like the idea of investing money, and they don't like the idea of having an unstable income.
Yeah, it's the stability, the security, the yeah.
Yeah, and do not invest hundreds of thousands of euros in the company, yeah? So even if you've got 10 people in your team, you can ask your team, is there somebody in the team who wants to take over? Mm. And normally, generally speaking, yeah, out of 10 people, there's only just one entrepreneur, yeah? Mm. So you put your entire company you build over the last 20 years in risk, yeah? Just if you can agree with this one single person who's got this entrepreneurial genes, yeah? So it's madness, I would say, doing it, yeah? Yeah, just hoping that you can agree with this one single person, yeah? In our game, it's again totally different. Imagine you've got a team of already 10 entrepreneurs in your team. Mm-hmm. They ask you, hey, Mark, isn't it time for you to leave that we can take over?
Okay. So, right. I see your chances of having a sort of is it like an MBO basically? Or like, but your chances, if they're all more entrepreneurial mindset, are better
absolutely. Chances are much, much more higher. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we are a living example of that. We already did it two times. Yeah.
Okay.
So the founder of EO, who started the company in Winchester, yeah, he then left the business and two of the existing partners took over, Andrew and Linda.
Okay.
And then I joined, and as Andrew and Linda wanted to change the role, yeah, I took over again as a partner. So we already did it two times, and we know it works, yeah.
Yes.
And I'm sure if I turn to my best partner saying, hey guys, now for me it's time to leave, which this is not, how can we structure a deal? Yeah.
Great.
I'm 100% convinced there will be a deal.
Yes. Okay. Makes sense. Yeah. That's really good. Fantastic. From your perspective, is there anything you wanted to share that I haven't asked you yet?
Yep. Basically, I think, yes, Mark, we are through the entire journey. It's about building a team. Then it's about, when we talked about the seven levels, yeah. Mm-hmm. Then it's about, preparing the company for being sold. Mm-hmm. And the main and most important thing, that there's an income stream which is not connected with you as the owner. You probably will use your own income stream, because your clients are connected to yourself, yeah. But you have got 9 other people or 10 other people, yeah? And that's the most important part. And that's the equity you can sell, yeah?
Yeah.
So if it's only...
Is that the magic number, Stefan? Yeah? Like how many people gives you the critical mass that you have that additional income stream beyond yourself, you know, in that certainty?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, great question, because again, that's a learning, yeah? We learned that as soon as you go over a team of 12 people, things are not getting just one person, additional person. Yeah, things are getting totally different. Yeah, you can have a team spirit with 12 people, and a team spirit means that they still interact with each other on a daily or frequent base. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're more than 12 people, things are totally get different. Yeah. So that's the reason why we always think about in teams of 12 partners.
But couldn't the team of 12 break down further into pods or what you call them? What was the word again? Not practices, but
clusters.
Cluster, right. So couldn't a team of 12 then break into another cluster that is part of the overall structure?
That could be. I learned the number of 12 basically from a worldwide very successful company, Wirth. It's Wirth, the German company,
How do you spell that, Stefan?
It's a W-U, that's a U with two dots, R-T-H.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're a huge, huge multi-billion company, yeah?
Yeah.
And the founder said, we always think in teams about 12.
Okay.
And as soon we are 12, we go back to 16 people, and then you build again to 12 people.
I mean, the Roman army was organized in a similar way.
Okay.
Right? 10 was the number of, so you would have the 10 people are the ones that you share the tent with, you cook together, you look out for each other. And then of course they have 10 groups of 10 is a century. And then they have however many centuries in a, you know, and so on. But 10 was the kind of basic building block. So one more thing, actually, are you okay for time? Cause I realize there's one more important thing, which is the technology and the platform. So if you are building, because we talked about trying to create something that people don't want to leave, they feel like they would be worse off doing it themselves than remaining part of your team. And you mentioned the training, but the other aspect is the platform and the technology you're providing. So that's where EO Intro, is it EO Intro? Is that, or Executive Intro?
Yeah, Executive Intro, we call
it. Right, Executive Intro, which is your white label version of iIntro comes in. So you've developed this technology platform, which allows your partners to make it easier for them to win new clients, to differentiate themselves, to justify why the client should pay a retainer and so on. How important is providing a platform, providing, you know, a suite of technological tools in order to enhance the success of your partners and make them not want to ever leave?
Yeah, absolutely crucial. Absolutely crucial. Yeah. So it's in our case, it's Executive Intro for how it's basically our entire process of doing assignments and place candidates and handing over the candidates to our clients with videos and assessment tools. And you all know what iIntro is doing. On the other side, our platform, which is the CRM system and the ATS system, absolutely crucial. And we are working all on the same platform. And there's only one rule, that everything is visible for everybody. So everybody in the entire organization, I can today go in and check, has ever anybody of my partners spoken with company XYZ and to whom they spoke? And this is accessible for everybody in the organization. Yeah. So they can make the links and combine the dots and say, oh, you're working with company. I've got an idea. Let's share something. Yeah. The same is true for all the candidates. So we are absolutely 100% open.
Yeah, no, I can see the benefit of that for sure. Stefan, I've really enjoyed this. Thank you very much for coming on the show and sharing your experience of how to scale executive search firms. Really, really interesting.
Yeah, Mark, really excellent. I really enjoyed it being here on the team. Yeah, and just a small advertisement block, for example.
Sure, go for it.
If anybody of the listeners is looking for to scale and to grow the company, they just turn to me and come to me. We are open to grow in Europe and beyond Europe. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
In the afternoon, I've got a call with Turkey. Then late in the afternoon with the United States, with the UK in the afternoon. Yeah, we are just going and growing internationally.
Amazing. Stefan, so we'll put a link to the EO website and your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. But if anyone is listening and they want to just go straight to LinkedIn, it's Aschenbrenner, A-S-C-H-E-N, Brenner, B-R-E-N-N-E-R. So Stefan, thank you so much. Look forward to speaking again soon.
Mark, was a pleasure. Thank you.